Rock waited nearly 3 hours until activity in the Red City had died down to virtually nothing. They would be all sleeping now. Even the guards would have their senses at their lowest readiness. It was time to strike. He headed toward the fence. They had set up a defensive perimeter for which the normal man would have seemed impenetrable. But Rock's eyes took in the machine gun emplacements, the guard towers, the bunkers with slits of light, and immediately saw the weak spot. To the right, in the space between two towers, the lights of the flood lamps faded to a dark gray. He headed toward the blind zone, crawling along on his arms and legs, his dark, filthy clothes hiding him among the shadows. Roxon got right up to the electrified fence. He took out a roll of insulating burlap and wrapped it around his hands. The fence was nearly 10 feet tall. Rock slid right up to the base of the steel mesh and watched the two guard towers. Not a sound nor movement. It was time to move. He pulled himself over with every ounce of his mutant strength and soared over the top in a perfect arc. He rolled instantly into a darker shadow created by one of the towers and waited a few seconds to see if he'd been spotted. Roxon made his way, creeping among the dark spots, until he reached the base of the building. He spotted an entrance below ground. He slid down the steps to a door that was chained shut with a padlock. He fitted the bowie knife between the lock and its chain and pushed with all his strength. Door open. Rock headed into the monolithic structure. The basement halls were dimly lit, and seeing no one in sight, the Doomsday Warrior moved swiftly through the labyrinth of corridors until he reached the fire stairs. He bounded up them three at a time. He'd start on the second floor and work his way up until he found just what the hell was going on. Rock opened the steel door to the second floor slowly, his knife in his hand, prepared for anything. A guard about 30 feet down the hall sat facing him, but his eyes were closed as he slept. Rock slid into the hall, silent as a cat. He headed straight for the Russian, who somehow sensed the motion, and opened his eyes. The man's eyes bulged as big as apples, his lifeblood coursing out of his neck. Rock sheathed the knife and headed down the corridor. Rushed back toward the fire door through which he had just entered. But it shut right before he reached it. Rock tore down the long neon-lit hall toward the far end some 200 feet away. He reached it and swung through the door just as a squad of Reds rounded the corner to the right.
Grab him!
He veered to the left away from them, coming to another intersection of halls.
This place is a goddamn maze.
He took a left, down a corridor filled with glass doors, announcing Lieutenant this and Major that in gold letters. Ahead of him, another squad of Reds suddenly appeared. He was cut off. The Russians closed in on him from both sides, and as they approached, Rock noticed that they weren't regular Red Army at all. Every man was dressed in the dark brown fatigues, but they all wore the hideous emblem of the Death's Head on their shoulders. Elite troops. The officer closest to Roxon smiled.
Ted Roxon, I presume. You may as well surrender. We have been expecting your presence for days. I promise you, you cannot escape. The floor is filled with over 200 of our elite troops. Please, no fuss, yes?
Roxon palmed his knife and held his hands above his head. He walked toward the paunchy officer, so handsome in his crisply pressed uniform.
Oh no. No fuss.
Stop!
No fuss at all.
Roxon turned toward the other troops, who fired wildly, hitting one another, ricocheting bullets off the walls.
No! No! Don't shoot! Don't kill that man or you die!
Roxon slammed into the cowering elite troops, jumping around in confusion behind the body of their dead commanding officer. Roxon slashed everywhere around him, kicking backwards when he felt flesh approach. Troops fell around him like blades of grass cut with a scythe, their bodies smashed and broken. But they hit back, too, slamming at Roxon with the butts of their rifles. The squads closed in from both sides of the hall. He killed and killed, but at last the bodies just piled up around him and over him. The KGB elite troops hit at the murderous whirlwind of a man with their guns and fists until he felt himself sinking into a bloody darkness from the combined blows. Finally, against his iron will, he slipped beneath the waves of unconsciousness. Premier Vasily, in his sickbed, was feeling slightly better. He was thinking about the latest information about America. The rebel attacks were growing more frequent, more daring. The Premier had to admit he felt a certain respect for the brave but doomed fighters. They were somewhat like the original indigenous American Indians, fighting the settlers who were taking their land. He hoped that someday reservations could be established for the American free fighters in the United Soviet States of America. Perhaps treaties could be written and ratified. Of course, many of the treaties back then had been broken or ignored by the American government. No doubt the Russians would do the same. But still, he hated to think of the total destruction of every last American free fighter, even the legendary Ted Roczen. Surely land could be set aside for them, perhaps the wastelands, as they were resistant to radiation anyway. He fell asleep, thinking of passing on peace to the world. Outside the Premier's room, the three doctors from the Moscow College of Surgeons conferred. They didn't see any chance of the Premier surviving the week. Now that they had regained regular access to Vasily, they had been able to increase the dosage of the slow-acting poison.
Ah, it is a good thing the Premier has allowed us to continue the treatments. Kilov will surely make his move for power soon. Then we shall be rewarded.
Shut up, Minkin, you fool! Even here, someone could have a listening device. Spies are everywhere. Keep your mouth shut. It is by no means over yet. Have you seen any more deterioration since we began leaving the injections for his servant to administer?
No, but...
Perhaps the Premier only said that he would have Rahala give the injections in order for us to stop pestering him. Sometimes I wonder if he is really taking it. He still looks too well for a man being given intravenous doses of cancer toxin.
If so, what will we tell Kilov? That we have failed? That he must rearrange his plans? We must somehow arrange an accident for Rahala and regain direct access to His Excellency.
Outside. Outside in the park, we can talk more. Not here.
They walked out the side entrance and passed the ceremonial guards standing stiffly at attention in the sub-freezing temperature, their faces white as the snow that fell constantly from the dark sky. Photographers flashed pictures as the trio of physicians hit the sidewalk.
Dr. Minkin, Antonin Benyaminov from Pravda. How is the Premier doing?
He is progressing quite well due to our treatment. And, of course, His Excellency's strong constitution is helping him along. However, I must be candid. The grandfather remains critically ill. We should all hope for his speedy recovery for the sake of the Empire.
Other questions were shunned, and the doctors walked to their waiting limousines.
Grandfather, you are awake.
Rahala, my dear friend, have they given you their medicine?
Yes.
Get rid of it. If my time has come, then I shall accept it.
Of course, Grandfather.
Please, Rahala, my dearest friend, read it to me again. You know, my favorite.
Rilke, of course.
Rainer Maria Rilke was the grandfather's favorite poet. The book was hidden inside a cover stating, "Lenin, Glorious Leader," by Menshikov. Just in case someone should glance at his shelves in his library. Rilke was on the prescribed list of forbidden readings. A premier could, of course, have anything. But it was not good for morale, or for the underlings, the nurses and housekeepers, to see the premier of all the Russians contaminating himself.
Ah, here it is.
Read it, will you, please?
This stood once among mankind, stood in the midst of fate. The extinguisher stood in the midst of not knowing, as though it existed and bowed stars from the established heavens towards it. Angel, I'll show it to you as well. There, in your glance, it shall stand redeemed at last, in a final uprightness. Angel, gaze, for it is we, O Mightiness. Tell them that we were capable of it.
Ah, yes. Beautiful. How beautiful. And you enunciate so clearly, catching every nuance of the poet. So.
He drifted off to sleep once again, a smile on his peaked face. Rahala put the book back on the library shelf and went over to the bottle. He had squirted the last doses of the medicine the doctors had left for him to give the grandfather. He was sure there was something wrong with this stuff. It smelled funny. He sealed the lid on the bottle and put tape on the outside. On it, he wrote, "To MKVD Central Lab for analysis, top priority. A. Vasili, top secret." The chauffeur was handed the container inside a small box, and he was off.
Now we shall see. Just what have they been doing to you?
There had been enough poison in the hypos to kill a horse. The order was given, signed by the shaky hand of the premier himself. It was carried out at 6:07 the next morning. Minkin was first.
What was that? Oh, God. I never even got to...
Simultaneously in the Moscow suburbs, Menzies ran for his life. And in Omsk, Sverdlov, the youngest of the trio, got down on his hands and knees.
Please! We didn't have a choice! It was Kirov! He said he would kill our families! He said he...
The hail of bullets nearly tore his head from his body. Premier Vasili stared at the aerial reconnaissance photos of Colonel Kirov's attack on Pavlov City in the central part of the United States. Radio had been cut off, but satellite intel was able to eavesdrop on bits of conversation within the fortress city, conveyed over walkie-talkie and phone.
Is there any possibility that the takeover of Pavlov City was not Kirov?
It is without question. He was in direct command.
So they are now fighting openly to take control of America, preparing to broaden their power before I pass. I have no choice. I must once again enter the struggle for power. Kirov cannot become the next premier. Rahala.
Yes, grandfather?
I am fortunate to have one man around me who is not trying to kill me. I see now my mistake. I had thought that the others would struggle, but remain at least nominally civilized, but this is no longer the case. Kirov is an animal. He's directly challenged me. And now... he must die.
Roxen opened his eyes. He was in a cell, chained down. For the first time in his life, in his 34 years of beating the odds, the Russians had captured him. And worse, he wasn't in the hands of the Red Army, from whom he would have a good chance at escape, but the KGB, who would watch him with the eyes of a hawk. One of the guards walked over to the bars of his cell and peered through with a sneer.
Wouldn't you like to know how close you are to the end? Ted Roxen, the mighty ultimate American. Just a prisoner, like all the other idiot bandits who think they can defeat the combined power of the Russian Empire. Do you admit now who is stronger, Roxen? At least, will you admit the truth?
Why don't you step in here with me for a moment, compadre? You and I could have a little fun. See, I'm all chained up. I know how you KGB like to get your kicks.
Yeah. And get crushed in your mutant arms? No thank you, Roxanne. But I think Colonel Kilov will be down here shortly, and he will get what he wants from you. I've seen our commander work on prisoners. He is a true master of getting the information that he wants.
I'm sure. If there's anything that Kilov is an expert in, it's torture.
Next time I see you, you won't nearly be so smart.
Rock sat on the cold concrete floor, looking around the small cell for any opening, any weakness. There was a sheet drawn across the bars between the cell next to his. Several minutes later, he knew who was coming. His sixth sense told him. At last they would meet face to face after all these years. Colonel Kilov walked up to the bars of the cell and looked in, his rat-like face twitching from the combination of all the pills he was popping and the excitement at capturing Ted Roxon.
So, you walked into our trap, Roxon. I thought you were uncatchable, a legend in your own time. That's right, the whole takeover of Pavlov City was a lure.
Wow, all this just for me? I'm flattered. You make me feel so popular.
So, you have steady nerves and cool eyes, do you? Maybe I'll wind up making those eyes decorations on my trophy wall.
You'll get nothing from me. In fact, why don't you come in here and we'll see whose eyes wind up on the cutting room floor.
So nasty, Roxon. And I heard you were so polite. A defender of maidens and dogs.
Polite to normal humans, not barbarians.
You will not speak of me with such words! You see this? It's stun gas. I'm moving you to my special room.